This is Crafting the Short Story with your host, author and editor, Darren Todd of DarrenTodd.net. Now, let's explore the agony and the ecstasy, the magic and the mechanics of short fiction.
Hello, hello, and welcome to episode 10 of Crafting the Short Story. This week, we're going to be talking about hooks. They're those things that you use in order to draw your reader in, to pull them in immediately, often from the very beginning, with a very nice, clever first line. I remember there was a phase that I went through with my short stories where I was obsessed with making sure that I used a really good hook right at the beginning. I remember reading somewhere, and I never really verified if it was absolutely true, that one of my favorite authors, Chuck Palahniuk, the author of Fight Club, was trying to understand what went into a really good modern hook. And he went into a bookstore and he looked at the first line of all of the modern bestsellers. Again, I don't even know if that's true or not, but it was certainly something that I practiced later as well, is going into a Barnes & Noble and simply looking at the first line of all these books and establishing whether or not it actually drew me in and what it made me think, what it invoked, and whether it most notably wanted me to keep reading. And I find that in peer review, particularly online peer review, where most of the time you don't have a lot of buy-in from the person who is giving you the review. That can be good. It means they can be very honest and they won't necessarily be wearing kid gloves, but it also means they don't really know you. So immediately they are almost like an editor trying to look for a reason to put the work down. And I don't mean put it down as in insult it. I mean put it down as in stop reading it. So often, if a book has a really good hook right at the beginning, it will be complimented. If it doesn't, then most of the time you'll have people looking at it and saying, well, where's the story actually start? Maybe it starts in the fourth paragraph, so I'm going to whack all these other paragraphs. And you know, that's where it starts, is with that really good hook. I have a bit of a problem and take some umbrage with that. I think that hooks have their place, and if initially you write a hook as a kind of prompt for yourself, maybe you're pantsing the plot of a short story. I mean, obviously, short stories are dissimilar in that way from novels, where I feel that a novel can really suffer if it is not plotted out. A short story can be pantsed, written by the seat of the pants, and usually turn out just fine, assuming that the writer is willing to do some character development and plot restructuring and just rewriting in general thereafter. So if what it takes to begin that process is writing from a hook, then by all means write from a hook. But I think at the same time, it's silly to automatically assume that a hook is absolutely necessary and that it must come at the very beginning and that it has to have sort of the same structure that we've come to expect from it. And that is often the in media res, in the middle of things, hook. So I'll give you some examples, because for a while there, I was getting pretty good at writing hooks. Now, maybe that helped me as it was a prompt and helped me to put together the story, or particularly with something shorter, it might have helped with just getting words on paper. Here's a great prompt, go. I mean, there are even publications like the First Line magazine that gives you your hook. Most of the time they're hooks. Sometimes they're just general sentences, but sometimes they're actually hooks, and everyone writes with the first line being exactly the same, a line that's usually a hook. And you sort of pants it from there most of the time. So a good example of a good first line, a nice solid hook from back when I was very concerned about that, and wanted that in particular, would be a story that I've had some good reviews on, but has never actually been published. And one of these days, maybe I'll do an effective enough rewrite on it to try and actually shop it again. But was one that begins with, after saving a girl's life, I ate banana pancakes for breakfast. So, okay, that's interesting. There's something It's happened right away. He saved a girl's life. You don't know what the circumstances are, but that sounds like a pretty adventurous thing to have done. But then you have something not adventurous and very plain, such as eating pancakes. And, of course, a main character, a narrator, who is being flip about something that is very serious, saving someone's life. So that's a good example of a hook. Now, in this, I have him talking about the pancakes and then sort of a little bit of world building. But then I use the pancakes as a sort of refrain to say, okay, I'm world building, I'm telling you about this, but then I'm getting ahead of myself, let me get back to the pancakes. And again, it is sort of setting up a kind of intentionally, even stubbornly nihilistic character. So it says a lot more about the character than it does about his setting or about, you know, obviously the pancakes don't actually matter. They're sort of a metaphor for, you know, the character himself and his attributes and how he has trained himself to be a nihilist, essentially. And yet, there is also another issue, I think, that is not often considered when it comes to writing those hooks, and that is that it might be cannibalizing the rest of your story. And I have a good example of this in a story I was rewriting and still am rewriting. And this is one that begins with a hook, as most do. And in the rewrites, I was maintaining that very thing. So in this case, it's actually not the line at the very beginning. I do have a bit of a hook at the very beginning, and I think I sort of treat it the same way as the example I just gave. Hook followed by slight world building, followed by immediate scene. And it seems to work. I think that I wouldn't be surprised if someone came in and said, oh, well, you know, your story really begins here in paragraph 2 when you have, you know, the action actually beginning. But I'm quite okay with a single paragraph that actually places the story a little bit, especially if it begins with something that arouses curiosity. I'm quite all right with that. But in this case, it was the second section, and it was something I was rewriting. So I brought in the first probably 2,500 words into a peer review group, and then was bringing in the second 2,500 words. And it began with something that I was trying to make a hook, which was my parents didn't mention the ring the next day. Something had happened with the ring. And the morning went along like most mornings, but then it happened again. So in this case, what happened is that things are disappearing around this boy, around the main character. But what I found I did was, in starting in that way, and this is was the first draft, mind you, is that when I started doing that is I wrote something, and then everything else was getting the reader up to speed. It was catching them up. Well, what's the problem with that? Well, the problem is that you are doing something that could be immediate scene, that is, currently happening at that moment. And I don't mean tense here. I mean actually putting the reader into the scene. That often means more dialogue. It means that whatever they are reading, no matter the tense, it is happening at that moment as opposed to let me sum things up, because the juxtaposition of that is narrative summary. Now, there's nothing wrong with narrative summary. It is, okay, here I am, even if you're talking about in the past, it was last Thursday, and I am bringing you up to speed on something that happened the Wednesday before. Narrative summary. Instead of, I'm telling a story about last Thursday, and here we are in last Thursday. So that would be a good example of the difference between immediate scene and narrative summary. So the issue was that when I started by saying, here's what happened, almost as the climax of this section, I was doing nothing but playing catch-up thereafter. So I found myself making everything a sort of sequence of events in summary that led up to that climax, instead of simply beginning the scene, putting the reader in it, here we are in the scene, and it ends, or in the middle, it doesn't have to be the ending. But at some point, you arrive at the climax, something else disappearing, organically. You arrive at it when it actually happens. This has its own appeal that doesn't necessarily need the hook at the beginning. If you put a reader into immediate scene, unless it's handled very poorly, and especially if it's a subsequent section, they're going to have buy-in. You don't necessarily need to generate buy-in via a hook, and a hook can actually hurt you in that case. because you're cannibalizing on what's to follow. And it's almost as if I got into the habit of doing that, because in the same scene, and this was a scene that luckily my peers revealed to me as not being as powerful as the scene before it and potentially the scene after, but I think I just set the tone for that by having that hook and building up only to that hook for the rest of it, that even a later scene in the same section, I did something very similar. The worst part was that my parents couldn't believe I had no involvement. So, first of all, it's telling, not showing. It's narrative summary. And then I went on to show in immediate scene the result of that suspicion, the suspicion his parents had. But it would have been better simply to show it and then have the narrator express that disappointment after the scene, or maybe even not at all. But doing so before takes something away from the scene. So what I would suggest in this, and what I think I'm going to do if I find myself going back into this and repeating the same process of using hooks when they might not be necessary, is to, in rewrites, whack those hooks if I find that they aren't necessary, or if I find that they are stealing the thunder of the later immediate scene. Now, also, the result of rewrites often in this kind of case is that you can find bits of narrative summary that are acting just like that. I'm arousing interest instead of just putting them, I'm trying to use narrative summary to arouse interest instead of simply creating immediate scene, is that you can then look and say, oh, okay, well, I really should just show this in a scene, no matter how brief. And by all means, do that. If your instincts say to do that, instead of just spoon-feeding what you hope is an interesting hook to the reader, and you say instead, well, maybe I really should show that, then do so, and do so in rewrites. And what you might discover as a result is that there are a few lines of narrative summary, hook or not, that you can then get rid of, because you are showing that. You are putting the reader right into that. So, in summary, I think that hooks have their place, especially in short fiction. I want to make that clear, is that they certainly have a role in short fiction, especially if they're acting as some sort of prompt. But I think that they are a tool that is excellent for a first draft, with the writer being all right with knowing that he might go back, he or she might go back and flesh those things out instead of simply spoiling it. Or if it's something where you're going off of a prompt and that prompt is a hook, then write it out and then whack the hook and take it out or place it somewhere else. But I just wouldn't get into the trap of, or even necessarily listen to, the sort of critique that convinces someone that the story only begins with a hook and doesn't begin until that hook is present. Because I don't believe that to be the case. I think it is probably a habit of the person giving the critique as much as it is a habit of the writer to have put it in there to begin with. Now, that probably works in reverse as well. And that is that if you have lots and lots of immediate scene, but perhaps it doesn't quite arouse interest or takes a long time to get to where it needs to go. I don't typically write like this, so I can't necessarily sympathize with that, because I probably get to the point and am concerned with staying on point in my rewriting more than I am fleshing things out and seeing where they will go and maybe then having to cut way back. But if you were that kind of writer, it could work in reverse, in that you are embedding hooks in subsequent writes. But I think one lesson that I'm most certainly learning now and will continue to learn when it comes to rewriting is that you cannot be arbitrarily dedicated to your first draft. And I believe that most of the time, those hooks are simply a part of the first draft. So don't get attached to them, even if that's what brought you to where you are now. As you're rewriting, they maybe have done their job and it's time to retire them. Well, that's all I've got for this week. Again, please subscribe, and if you would like, review us on iTunes. And don't forget to check out other back episodes, either by subscribing on iTunes or going to darrentodd.net. Take care.
This has been Crafting the Short Story with Darren Todd. visit Darren online at darrentodd.net.